This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
The NCAA hides under a table, hopes nobody notices all of the silence. We'll get to that in a second.
Why do we hide under a table? It seems like it's a pretty easy place to find someone if they're just hiding, merely hiding under a table.
You know? I think it comes from videos in the advent of television where it is that people in classrooms should hide, although that's hiding under a desk, which the NCAA can also be accused of doing right now. I believe those video routes are what you would do in the case of a nuclear apocalypse. And you're right when you say it. Hiding under a table is not going to do you any good. And the parallel works here as Lou Holtz talks about storming Normandy. The NCAA right now is absolutely hiding under a desk or a table as the apocalypse bursts out in all air, all places, and everyone is fighting. We'll get back to the anarchy of college sports, because rarely is the money laid this bare on the table. I'm telling you, Stugatz, the stuff that's happening right now can't be unseen. Like, this stuff will stick to Manfred. The greed on it will stick to Manfred. What's happening in college football, you will not be able to unsee the idea that, yeah, you thought the SEC was mercenary, but now you know the SEC is mercenary. Like, it should be, the E should be for expendable bodies. Like, it should be for expendable or disposable, you know, because what's happening here, that doesn't really work, disposable, but you understand what I mean.
That would make it the SDC.
Which doesn't feel as good or as strong in any way, and yet I think we all agree that as long as the SEC plays football, it'll feel like a full college football season. The SDC playing that doesn't feel the same.
Also, expendable bodies also changes the name of the conference.
You're absolutely right. It does.
My the construct of what you were trying to say was flawed from the get-go.
It really was. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And I should have postponed it toward later in the show like I intended, but I got caught up in the air. It's a social issue. All of a sudden, it's amazing. Because you know how I gravitate toward the anarchy at every point.
I'm still trying to recover from your Big 12 defense joke in regards to social distancing.
I texted Mike last night, what a dad joke I threw in the middle of the show there with the Big 12 conference will be safe on defense no matter how much they play because of all the social distance that there always is between the defenders. Put it on the poll, Tony, at Levitard Show.
That joke get longer?
A good joke or not a good joke? The Big 12 on defense socially distances. A good joke or bad joke? But we've got conflicting opinions here, and much like First Take, we've got to foment argument. And I feel like, and I don't know who else has seen it from Tony and Stugatz and Roy, but Mike and Chris have both seen Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks return to HBO. HBO does everything well. Were both episodes last night? Was it both the Raiders and the Chargers?
Well, it's the Rams and the Chargers, fine, and they're not highlighted in different episodes, Dan. Each episode focuses on both teams, a historic first for the Hard Knocks franchise.
And how did you feel about it, having watched it?
I loved it. I loved it because, look, from the jump, two teams being covered in Hard Knocks, obviously better than one, because I think one of the problems with certain Hard Knocks seasons is they may be forced storylines. It might get a little slow in periods. Now you have two teams to choose from. So you're getting the best cut from each side because you have to fill out an hour of programming, and now you have two teams to shoulder that content burden. Also, to do this during a pandemic, to be able to actually see the protocols rather than just have them reported on in a tweet you saw is fascinating. It makes it unlike any other Hard Knocks.
That actually is something that I would be interested in as you see what's happening in college football. As Dabo says, Stugatz, that there is no question that these players are safer under our rules and rigidities than they would be elsewhere.
37 positives a couple weeks ago.
Yes, but he is claiming that there's no question they're safer. Nick Saban is claiming there's no question they're safer. I'm not even here to argue with that, but the part that I find interesting about the layers of finance here is that some schools will be able to afford these protocols and some schools will not be able to afford these protocols.
By the way, the counter argument to me saying that they had 37 positives is, wait, that's all intake. Once we get them within our structure, they're all clean because they have the antibodies because they all had it.
Yeah, that's first of all, there is no proof. You can get it a second time. That is,
yes, people have had positives multiple times. There are certain baseball players that can shake negative tests, even though they felt totally asymptomatic and they had their first positive result 2 months ago. It's we're still learning about it. It's very confusing.
Okay, and so while I don't want to sit here and talk about the argument of whether or not Dabo and Nick Saban are right, that if you totally limit the freedom of players by putting them under the dictator coaches, that those coaches can indeed keep them safe. Let's not argue that for the moment. I am just interested, as someone, Stugatz, Disney's a big company. We're all learning about this as we go through this. Mike Ryan and I and you, before you were quarantined, have been coming into a totally abandoned hotel, a hotel that is abandoned entirely. It used to have a temperature checker out front, but that guy has fled the premises. So
thankfully, we take our own temperature, Dan.
That's right.
Well, he's still not back. That guy's not back yet.
You haven't been back, so you wouldn't know that. And there's a lock on that door. So when I tried to get in there while using my shirt around my hand, and that's usually my knee that I'm using these days. But as I put my hand in there, I just started jostling it and it was locked. And I'm like, oh, look. The apocalypse is such that the temperature guy is gone now. And, you know, we got a couple of hand sanitizers that Disney sent us and some sort of machine that smells bad that I'm afraid to go to because I feel like it has the coronavirus in it.
Don't forget about the placards that tell you on the floor exactly where you should stand.
I can't wait to return in a week. I mean,
but Chris, that part had to be interesting to you, even if you didn't like Hard Knocks, seeing the lengths that a professional football team with all the money in the world has to go to in order to make sure to keep its players safe.
Well, that's all we got. We got an hour infomercial about how safe the NFL is making it, which I'm going to give them one episode. They just need to set the table that they're going to be really safe. If I see any more B-roll of a hand sanitizer, though, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm telling you, this is just an hour straight of them telling you how clean it was going to be. They didn't set any storylines of a guy they're going to cut 4 episodes from now. I didn't get the opening scene. The opening scene of Hard Knocks is like historic. You wait for it every year. It's like Christmas morning where you wait to see how they're going to start it with the music coming in at the end of it. But this was just Anthony Lynn talking into a Zoom camera.
Oh, no. This is a very Stugatz take from you. Okay, I'm sorry you're already sick of watching the NFL deal with a pandemic for the first time in its history. Sorry that got boring for you 40 minutes in. And they already laid the groundwork for players getting cut. And you saw one player get cut. And he went to Anthony Lynn saying, what the bleep are you doing? You're making a huge mistake.
Wait, but Mike, you're willing to give them a pass, the NFL, because you're allowing them that first episode where they're basically showing you, hey, we could do this even with a world pandemic going on. You're giving them a break and assuming it will get back to a more traditional Hard Knock.
Chris is extending that. That's Chris's take. I'm happy seeing all these protocols because I had so many questions about how it worked and how you executed and how painful it is to get the test. I learned a lot watching.
But you want a whole season of that? Like, I got it. After 20 minutes, I get it. Before they enter every room, they're going to get their temperature checked. They're going to sanitize. Like, I didn't need it. Like, it was all we got was them, like, every meeting that they were having about, oh, we got to separate. Oh, you guys are sitting too close. Like, we get it.
But position meetings are fascinating over Zoom, and you see all the technical difficulties that they have where someone's voice gets super echoey. I always wondered, all the same Zoom mistakes that pop up when we do the show, that's got to happen in positional meetings, right? And Sean McVay out there trying to teach people offense without the ability to actually throw the ball because it breaks some sort of protocol. It was fascinating.
Now, Chris, I think you got to give them an episode to establish that and show that. I don't think they'll continue to show it throughout the entire season. I didn't watch last night. I'll watch it today. I was busy watching Barry Trotz and those boys get it done for the Islanders. How about that?
Well, from the sound of your voice, you were busy eating entire cigarette machines. Yeah. Like, it is unbelievable. I believe that you have consumed an entire Marlboro factory. It is your voice sounds so bad this first segment.
Yeah, that is me screaming for my Islanders and Barry Trotz. Let's go, Islanders. Bump, 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 bump. That's what you heard last night coming out of my house. Out of the aisles. One of the lead.
Complete negative Nancy. There were some bright spots. We got shirtless McVay in a pool. We got to see his view. Man, what a spot he has in L.A. So there were a couple bright spots, but overall I was disappointed.
Also, McVay would totally crush it on Monday Night Football.
Oh,
totally. He is as likable as I thought he would be headed into this. That dude loves football, though.
And he's got some Marty Smith in him where his hair is always perfect. Like, you never see McVay. He wakes up with his hair just mwah.
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W-30. Here's your SportsCenter update. The Cowboys have signed Everson Griffin to a one-year deal that's worth $6 million, $3 million in base salary, $3 million in roster bonuses. A group of U.S. senators on Thursday morning released a list of items they see as important rights belonging to college athletes that they hope to soon protect or enforce with federal laws called the College Athletes Bill of Rights. And finally, a German circus that has been closed for months due to the COVID-19 pandemic is making some extra money by selling lion poop. The Krone Circus said it is selling jars filled with big cat droppings, which officials, said can be spread in a home garden to keep pets and wild animals from damaging plants. The circus said customers could visit the pop-up store during special business hours Monday through Friday, and the jars of lion feces can also be purchased for shipment online.
Stugatz, have you been drinking?
What do you mean?
Have you been drinking this morning?
It was a very obvious, like, slurring of words there.
No.
Are you okay? Are you having a seizure?
Yeah, fine. Why?
Okay, because it sounded like you were electrocuted in the middle of that. The tasered. Are you okay? All right, you're not drinking. Everything's fine.
I don't know. He seems pretty chill to me. A little too chill.
Yeah, fine. Why? I don't know what to tell you guys.
A little too chill. Sounding a little phlegmy. I don't know.
Did you go for a stroll this morning?
I'm still trying to put this one together.
I mean, perhaps. The circus erected a large sculpture dubbed Mr. Pooh outside the business to celebrate the new venture. Pop-up store. Poop. Poop up. Today on ESPN Daily, Daniel Cormier squares off this weekend for the UFC heavyweight title.
Protect that right side, Cormier. Protect that right side.
Thanks, Bert. After a rocky career, can the aging fighter cement his legacy? That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Tony, please put this on the poll. This is from a tweeter. Should the SEC change its name to Some Expendable Children? Should the SEC now go
you
by
found it.
Some Expendable Children?
That's so much better.
I found, and so much worse. I have a quote here, Stugatz, that I believe I'm being fooled by the internet on. Okay, I need somebody to authenticate this code because I simply don't believe that the quote I'm about to read to you is real. Okay. But I'm going to read it anyway, and we will figure out on the back end if this is a real thing that was said by a real human being.
All
okay?
right. Love
but
this kid.
In the conversation about the canceled football season, okay, UMass coach Walt Bell says, allegedly, reportedly, I do not believe it, quote, you know, my dad passed away in 2008. My biological mom OD'd in 2012. And to be honest with you, this is probably a tougher day than both of those days. End quote. Your thoughts there, because I have one immediate thought that jumps out to me above all others, beyond even like, holy bleep, is that a lack of perspective or sound like a lack of perspective? Your thoughts here, Stugatz, as you hear that quote.
He got caught up in the moment. There is no way he feels like that, that this day was worse than the day of the death of his mom and his dad. There is no way. He's caught up in the moment. He's caught up in the emotion. He wants a college football season so badly. He's going to regret saying that if he doesn't already regret saying that. That would be my guess as to what happened there.
All right. What it makes me wonder, okay, let's just say it's not a staggering lack of perspective. Let's say there are some mitigating circumstances, and perhaps he wasn't that close to his family, so the death of his parents isn't something that affected him the way the death of a football season has. The thing that jumped out at me beyond all other things, though, is UMass? UMass? When did UMass play an important football game? Chris, look up UMass's season-by-season record year. Like, what were they last year? 1-11? Like, what the hell is this man talking about? UMass has not... Like, you thought things were bad at Colorado State, Stugatz, where they abused the players in all sorts of ways, reportedly, for a nowhere program that has never played a meaningful down. But Colorado State is Alabama compared to UMass. Like, how is this the perspective of the UMass coach?
They were 1-11 last season.
What about before that?
Oh, you nailed it.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm an expert on UMass football. 1-11. First of all, smoke out the one and tell us who we should shame there, who kept us from a UMass 0-12 season being more important to this guy than the death of his parents.
That is the third 1-11 season they've had since 2011. I mean,
all right, give it to me year by year. I want to read the quote again, and then I just want you to give it to me year by year here. This was not planned out. Have we found out, Mike, whether this is a real quote? Because I get fooled by the internet all the time, and this is how you would do it if you were running The Onion. You would go to a program like UMass that exists only to get trampled by others. UMass exists to play college football and simply lose. They are the Washington Generals of college football. So UMass coach Walt Bell on the canceled football season. Quote, my dad passed away in 2008. My biological mom OD'd in 2012. And to be honest with you, this is probably a tougher day than both of those days. So go ahead. Last year, the Minutemen were 1-11.
Real quote from The Athletic.
All right, it is a real quote from The Athletic. Unbelievable. The year before that, what were they?
They were 4-8.
The year before that, what were they?
4-8.
The year before that, what were they?
2-10.
The year before that?
They had back-to-back 3-9 seasons in 14-15.
Before that?
Back-to-back 1-11 seasons in 2012, 2013.
All right, so now I'm going to read this quote to you again, and I don't know, my math is bad, but I think the best seasons they've had this decade, they've won, let's see, a third of their games. That's the best seasons that they have had, the four win seasons, but my dad passed away in 2008, biological mom OD'd in 2012, and to be honest with you, this is probably a tougher day than both of those days. When is the last time UMass, and are they indeed the Minutemen also in football? They are... because I don't know if they have one of those strange deals where nobody wants to be associated with this particular program, so they have a different nickname. When is the last time they had a winning season?
It looks like 2010, they put together a big 6-5 season.
They are indeed the Minutemen.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. This is staggering. I can't believe that this quote is coming out of the mouth of this man.
The team that they beat last season was Akron.
All right. Wow. Tell me more about Akron, please. And
I think their head coach's name is Tom Arth.
Okay, Tom Arth. You should be ashamed of yourself. We're publicly smoking you out for denying.
How do I know who Akron's football coach is? You know the answer.
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Here's your SportsCenter update. Stanley Cup quarterfinals. Bruins beat the Hurricanes 4-3. Islanders defeated the Capitals 4-2. The Avalanche beat the Coyotes 3-0. The Flyers got past the Canadiens 2-1. And the Canucks won against the Blues 5-2. Several game twos tonight. Blue Jackets versus the Lightning. Blackhawks versus the Golden Knights, Hurricanes versus the Bruins, and Flames versus the Stars. And finally, the North Carolina Aquarium in Pine Knoll Shores said employees drained the waterfall, which for 14 years served as a wishing fountain for visitors seeking to trade their coins for good luck. The aquarium said employees sifted out about 100 gallons of coins, as well as objects including eyeglasses, toys, and jewelry. They said employees do not yet know exactly how much money was removed from the waterfall. SportsCenter is brought to you by Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief. Works fast and you won't stink. It's pharmacist recommended odor-free pain relief for muscle pain, backache, strains, sprains, even arthritis. There's no stinging or burning involved. It's simple pain relief. Blue Emu Maximum Pain Relief works fast and you won't stink. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
That won't be happening next week. I'm sorry, my microphone was not on because Mike was too busy farting with the computer back there, because we are not terribly professional with our sports updates. And so we're losing our sports updates beginning next week.
Not
I was actually
up to company standard.
I was actually happy to hear Christine Lisi. I used to do Sunday morning radio in my home by myself with my dog, and Christine Lisi would do the update. So I was excited to hear that she's going to be a part of what we are doing. It means less content, of course, because we're perpetually in a spot where we have shrinking around here. You may notice that beginning August 17th, everything around us is going to sound a good deal different than us. So we will be here from 10 to noon, but we're excited, Eastern, we're excited about some of the other stuff around that as well, where we'll be able to do a local hour. You could check out today's with David Sampson. It was really strong. There were a couple of revelations in there I was not expecting at all. And we will have a podcast exclusive hour as well that's going to debut next week. Like, among the things we're going to do, fans of this show should be excited about this part of it. Like, next week we're figuring out how to, you know, watch a game with you. Watch a game with you away from here, maybe a Heat playoff game or something as the playoffs ramp up beginning next week. So there are a number of things that we're going to get to next week that we will tell you about next week. But I don't have a lot of confidence that we're going to actually execute any of those things, because we are a marching band to nowhere. And so for many months, Stugatz, like, this has been something that we just walked away from because we get distracted sometimes, or at least I've walked away from, and then Mike goes on paternity leave. But we had this wonderful thing we were in the center of, where Dana White and I were working toward fighting each other. And I want to give people all of the backstory on this, because they may have missed all of it. But this goes back away. Stugatz, in our history doing this show, how often have you ever heard me like invite someone to fight on the air? How often have you heard that?
I want to say maybe a half dozen times. Maybe
name another one, because I couldn't remember it off the top of my head. Maybe you and Cody, I have threatened to fight.
Yeah, but that was playful. The only time I thought bleep got real was with OJ McDuffie back in the day.
Oh, that was real, actually. Oh. Yes, we've cleared that all up.
I'm glad for you guys.
So am I, given that O.J. McDuffie has told the story of trying to get into a fight with Daryl Gardner, realizing Daryl Gardner had 150 pounds on him, and so he went out to the Dolphin parking lot and went to his car and got his gun! That is a good football fight. I am glad that
you would have taken him, though.
O.J. McDuffie was known as somebody who might have taken anybody, with or without a gun, for people 150 pounds heavier than him. Nobody wanted to mess with that dude. But here's some of the backstory here, because I don't think people actually know what happened in that interview and where it went sideways. I mean, we have been we have loved Dana White forever. I mean, he's been to our Miami studios. He's been through here for Highly Questionable. We were talking to him a lot before mainstream people were talking to Dana White. And what happened during that interview is I was trying to do an interview with him that the MMA media doesn't do with him, and he doesn't talk about money, about where it is that his labor is underpaid. And I knew it was tricky subject matter, and this is what else I knew that I don't feel like the audience is privy to. Like, I had signed already human resources paperwork that basically puts me a strike away for violating company policy from all of that Trump stuff 12 months ago, talking about racial divisions. And so the one place I've thought, Stugatz, that I might actually get fired here is if I run afoul of one of these corporate partners, an NFL owner who doesn't like what it is that I've said. Because ESPN has these partnerships with these giant money-making corporations, and Dana White doesn't get asked questions like this about how he makes his money. And during a pandemic, he's making monster money for this company at a time most people aren't. He's got a heavyweight fight that a lot of people are going to watch on Saturday. So I knew my line of questioning was going to be bothersome and agitate him. And so at the end of it, because I know I'm a strike away, and because you remember what happened with Manfred, Manfred's baseball, like, you remember what happened there. Like, I was afraid that something was going to happen where I ran afoul of Dana White again within our company. Already happened one time. We were doing an interview with Tony Kornheiser, and evidently that's where he got mad at me, I think, because we've always had a good relationship, and all of a sudden it went sideways. And next thing you know, he's on with Halle Berry on SportsCenter, and it escalates to this place after that happened on the radio.
Last week on the Dan Le Batard Show, Dan seemingly challenged you to a fight for charity. How serious do you think Dan is about doing this, and what's your response to that challenge?
Dan Le Batard is a big mouth. He's all talk and no action. And I can promise you, if he's even remotely serious, it ends very badly for him. But I will give you this. Dan Le Batard, if you are serious, I'll put up $250,000 for whatever charity we come up with. And we can do it, pal.
Okay, challenge accepted with big money, too. Dan Le Batard, you have 24 hours to respond.
Not big enough money, I'm afraid. You're going to need... I'm the headliner there, Stugatz. I might not be... He said himself, a lot of people would want to see me get knocked out. A lot of people... Nobody wants to watch 50-year-olds fight, but a lot of people would want to watch me get some pain. And also, Stugatz, I believe this is a bit of a no-win position for Dana White, because he's supposed to beat me. But right. If I catch him with something... If I catch him with something, Stugatz, seriously, that video is eternal. Like, people are expecting me to take a beating. I've seen the betting odds. People were taking – I was plus 550. That's an overwhelming underdog that underappreciates my weight advantage and my smothering tactics.
Oh, I just thought that was your weight advantage.
What if you catch him with something? What's going to happen? First off, I doubt you can catch him, but what if you catch him with something?
Imagine the video. Imagine the video. So anyways, my brother has made some fight posters, leboart.com, if you want to see what Frito Ortiz looks like in an old-timey fight poster. But because we don't finish anything around here, Mike goes on paternity leave. And so, Stugatz, was it three times I asked him for an update and he said the call had been scheduled and then moved? Like, they couldn't even execute a call on this. Where are we with this fight?
Happy to report that the call did happen and the fight is not happening.
Yeah. Oh, for the love of God.
They cited some sort of liability or nonsense.
For him?
What do you mean?
Like, the lawyers are protecting him. I'm going to break this dude in half. Disney's holding me back. Like, lawyers are holding me back. His bald head, I will crack it open if lawyers let me.
Yeah, I that's what was happening. The lawyers wouldn't let you drag Dana White.
I want to hear more about these smothering tactics, because the only thing I imagine you smothering is like nachos with cheese.
I'm not giving away the game. I'm not telling you what my game plan is with Dana White. I'm telling you that I've imagined over the last couple of months just internet footage going viral of me catching him with an elbow and all of a sudden just him spritzing blood from that bald Lex Luthor head.
But that's your strategy? What if I catch him with something? Like I have a puncher's chance?
Well, this is unbelievable. Why can't we execute
anything? You could always fight him unsanctioned. Like Rocky where? Five style.
Like where? Am I allowed to do that? Am I going to get in trouble when this guy who's making so much money for ESPN, I harm him and put him in the hospital for a month?
Look, it can't be on ESPN television. It can't be in the Octagon. But who's to say ESPN isn't in charge of a back alley behind the Clevelander, Dan?
Oh, we could get the clicks from that? Like a Dirty Kimbo Slice video on Reality Kings?
Miami street fights.
Paid that man his money.
Call Icy Mike. Call Icy Mike, who runs Reality Kings, and see if he'll film it and put it on his site. Just a big dirty fight in a literal Clevelander alley.
Look, I given my discussions with ESPN and the litigious history of one Dana White, I'm led to believe that Dana White put a stop to this behind the scenes.
Advance Auto Parts. Look, man, Stugatz, it's a fireable offense. If in this climate I take out ESPN's big moneymaker by cracking his head open, I don't blame the lawyers for protecting him on this one. I don't. In the next 90 minutes, you will get Bear Grylls. In the next 90 minutes, the show will talk to TJ Warren. And in the next 90 minutes, you will get Roy's thoughts on nut milk. But first, I know you're very excited, Mike, about Roy's thoughts on nut milk. You've been waiting for days. We will get to them, I think, maybe. But a tweeter writes in here, Lebatard show, for God's sake, I'll be that guy. You filthy, filthy casuals. Randy Couture barely has a 500 record. Brock Lesnar beat Frank Mir at UFC 100, and Fedor is the heavyweight. And then there's the goat emoji. Don't talk MMA unless it's Masvidal.
Is that guy?
And also a head in hands emoji. Yes, our apologies as well to Cain Velasquez. There are five or six guys that you can mention that probably deserve a place in this discussion, but Dana White's got two of them fighting on Saturday. And he says that's for best ever. Take it up with him as you want to argue whether or not somebody is the third or fourth or fifth best heavyweight in the history of the division.
And bang on correction on the UFC 100 thing. I felt vulnerable going out there. Brock Lesnar did fight, but as you said, Frank Mir. However, you listed Fedor as one of the greatest UFC heavyweights of all time, and I dare you to go check out Fedor's UFC heavyweight record and see how that stacks up.
That's correct, sir. Okay, we might be filthy, filthy casuals, Nickradamus, but at Nickradamus, but we also know that Fedor was pound for pound considered the best, and then he fought in UFC. And that stopped being the case. But you got us, big guy. You threw out a Frank Mir. You hit us in the face with a Brock Lesnar. You gave us a goat emoji. You gave us a guy with a head in his hands. And, sports.
Sports. And I gave you Finney.
Yeah. Hey, Finney.
Mike Ryan, I wanted to talk to you because Mike is very excited about some music that is now in our lives. He has been wanting. Stugatz, I don't know if you've heard this. We don't have, I don't think, the musical rights to any of this. I don't
but
know.
Now, Dan, we didn't have the musical rights to it, but it is a commercial release. I am talking, of course, the Song of the Summer. You're wondering, what's a Song of the Summer since there's no nightlife anymore during a pandemic? It is very clearly the MLS anthem produced by Hans Zimmer. And it is such a banger of epic proportions. I know you guys were watching MLS's back specifically to hear this rockin' anthem. Well, now I am happy to report it is available across all streaming platforms. That's right, the Song of the Summer. Let's get it to number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Hans Zimmer, MLS Anthem. Parentheses, procession.
Are we allowed to play it one time? How does this work? When can we play it?
Yeah, because it's a commercial release. I just do it like I can only play it once, though. And since I don't have it in the system, you're just going to have to listen to it the way that I have over the last 6 months.
Okay, so wait a minute. So before you do this, because we only get the way this stuff works, the rights and stuff are really annoying, and it's affected the podcast, and it's affected the live show. There are all sorts of rules when it comes to playing music.
Are you sure this is the time you want to use it? I mean, this is the time you want to go to it?
We can use it tomorrow. That's the beauty of this whole setup.
Well, right. I feel like I want to hear it now, though, because can you explain to the people the history of Hans Zimmer? Can you explain to the people who haven't heard why it is that you're this excited specifically? Because it was pretty epic. We went down this conversational path a few months ago with John Tesh, who did that rocking anthem that he gave us the rights to that we can play whenever we want, even though that's not supposed to be the way that
that's
it works.
That's legally binding.
But he told us on air, Stugatz, he said that we could play the rockin' anthem of John Tesh. If you're not familiar with his work, it skews a little bit older. It is generally placid. He has flowing blonde hair, even in his 60s. He used to be the host of Entertainment Tonight, and he just wandered over, because he's this talented, he just wandered over to the NBA and said, you know what? I'm going to spit a little something into my answering machine. And you know what's going to happen? In all the years after that, the answering machine is going to die, but my song is not. It's going to echo across decades, even though I'm the host of Entertainment Tonight. And you, Lebatard Show with Stugatz, you are welcome to play it as much as you like, because I own the mother bleeper. It brings a smile, a reluctant smile, to the face of Nut Milk Roy. Look at him. He's weary and he's tired, but this song conjures up some childhood, some Tesh. Roy, you look like you're feeling something that resembles a corpse experiencing joy.
We're probably going to need some context soon on that whole Nut Milk thing.
Yes, we will get to that in a moment. But first, I just want to hear, yes, Stugatz.
I thought Roy was going to respond to you there with the verbal word. He did not. But what that song does is it just makes you shake your shoulders and your head from left to
right. That's what
it
Roy does. Was doing, yeah. Forgetting for a moment that it's radio and we're not televised, and I was asking him a question. Also, he was assembling his important thoughts on Nut Milk, one would assume. However, I am ready to do it right now. I don't want to tease it anymore. Mike, I don't want to tease it anymore. I want to hear off of your phone right now, Hans Zimmer. I want MLS coverage. I want to see if it's as banging as John Tesh.
Oh, it's incredible. Why don't we kill two birds with one stone here? Get Roy's thoughts on Nut Milk to the tune of the MLS anthem by Hans Zimmer.
Okay, very good. We are combining a lot of things here. But, that's a little distracting, Mike. Because, all right, just start the song, and I will see whether I go to Roy during it. Build up the anticipation here. This is Hans Zimmer off the phone of Mike Ryan.
Nut Milk.
It's a more violent head nod. I mean,
Roy's thoughts on Nut Milk next. Bear Grylls going to join us in about 10 minutes. I want to ask him, among other things, you remember that Drew Brees story, the story that Drew Brees told about, like, just killing an alligator with Bear Grylls. So we're going to talk about that and other things. But we've also got TJ Warren scheduled at 12:30 Eastern, the guy that is, you know, the breakout star of the bubble, even a bubble that includes Devin Booker and Damian Lillard. And TJ Warren also, this happened. This is an actual thing that happened. This is the comedic pacing of this show. The gods laughing at me and the universe aligning. We had, for reasons that are hard to explain, a conversation about TJ Warren in which, and it's going to be Pacers and Heat during the playoffs, and you're going to get Jimmy Butler against TJ Warren. But Jimmy Butler said, TJ Warren is not in my class. And then Stugatz said something that at the time was statistically wrong. He said something that you will hear here. And then the first time TJ Warren played after that in front of us, he made it statistically right.
Yeah, Stugatz argued that he can get you 40 on any night.
45.
And this was Dan's response to that.
As you say, TJ Warren can give you 45, because I'm going to go the opposite on that. I'm going to say TJ Warren can't give you 45 on any given night.
And then the very first given night he was given, Dan, what did he give you?
So we've got to play that for him, right? Do we run the risk? He's not going to be mad at the very start of the interview,
you,
right?
You used to be a lot better at buttering up a guest, Dan. Let's try to go back to vintage Dan, butter you up, get you comfortable, and then here's the insult that I had before you joined us, but now we're friends now and we can all laugh at me. Sorry to tell you how to do interviews, but it's been a rough go of it lately in terms of protecting our relationships.
It has. Yeah, he's not going to be mad at me. He's certainly going to be mad at you. I mean, he's going to love
Sugats
me.
Sugats has been his biggest ally, his strongest supporter in the media. You're a day one TJ Warren backer.
All right, so let's go and let's do this with TJ Warren at 12:30. But before we get to that and before we get to Bear Grylls, we have Roy's thoughts on nut milk. Give us what you have here, Roy. We've been waiting for this.
Yeah, so my wife sent me out on a task to find some nut milk for, you know, the family, right? So I go into the store and I'm bombarded by all these options. And that's not even including the grain milk, the rice milk and the oat milk. But we're talking about hazel milk. We're talking about cashew milk, almond milk. And obviously the thing is, this milk is for people who are like not into lactose, right? But I wonder whose bright idea it was to basically milk a nut.
Okay, so very good. Thank you for doing that.
I don't even know how you go about milking a nut.
I wish that that phrase had been how the last segment ended, because I forgot to mention that during the middle of everything that was happening at the last during the last segment, I very clearly and obviously pulled a groin. And it was Mike's.
What?
I love nut milk. I do.
I just, to his point, though, I've got no idea how you produce milk from a nut. No matter how hard you squeeze on a nut, I've never seen milk come out of it.
So I love macadamia nut milk. I love almond nut milk. Coconut milk.
Are you lactose intolerant, Dan?
I have discovered that my body feels a hell of a lot better if it doesn't have any dairy in it. So I am actually
put a bunch of nut milk in your body.
That is correct. Way too much. But I avoid the almond milk and the cashew milk, but the macadamia nut milk is good. Coconut milk is good. This is more than I thought we'd be talking about this, and it precludes us from being able to talk about Hank Williams Jr., which I'm disappointed by.
I never tried nut milk. It seems like you have nothing but nut milk. I mean, that's...
And broaden your horizons, Sugats, yeah.
Whatever happened to whole milk? How about all these milks get over themselves?
All right, very good. Put it on the poll, Tony, good please. Point. How about all these milks get over themselves? Yes or no? Bear Grylls next. New show tomorrow debuts Prime Video, World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge, Fiji. Bear Grylls is the host. He joins us now, grateful for his company. Thank you, sir, for making the time. I was wondering if we could just start with you just listing your injuries over the course of your life, just sort of giving us a list, a detailed list of all the ways that you have brought harm to your body.
I don't know. I try and kind of forget about old injuries, but there have been a lot of them. You know, I broke my back in three places in the military in a free fall accident, and off my shoulder in Antarctica, and femurs in Canada, and a whole bunch of different things. But, you know, what it's taught me is that, first of all, don't be an idiot. You'll only get it wrong once. Learn from your mistakes. Be smart. And secondly is that I've been so lucky, and I think so much of my experience now has been the sum of many near misses. And I'm actually, you know, contrary to what you might believe, I'm actually pretty cautious as a person, especially on a lot of the shows we do, like, you know, Running Wild, where I'm taking one-on-one guests away, or something like the World's Toughest Race, where we had so many adventure racers out there. You've got to be absolutely on it with this sort of stuff. But yeah, hey, injuries. What's that great quote? I don't want to arrive at the end of my life in a perfectly preserved body. What a waste. I want to come screaming, hitting it sideways, covered in scars, screaming, Yahoo, what a ride.
What happened with the parachute jump in the military? Like, what are the details worth, you know, I don't know how painful this must have been, where you end up with your back broken in three places?
Yeah, that was definitely a darker time for me. But I ended up spending the best part of a year in and out of military rehabilitation back in the UK. It was a jump in Africa that went pretty wrong, but and then I eventually had to leave the military, and you know, but it was a long time on my back in braces and all of that, just thinking, am I ever going to be able to make it to the bathroom without crying in pain, let alone ever be able to climb again or do any of the sort of things that I was doing. I was serving with the British Special Forces at the time and living a life and a job that I, you know, loved with the people I loved. So that was a hard one to swallow. But, you know, I also look back on my career now and I think, you know, every cloud always has those silver linings. I know it's a cliche, but it's true, you know, and sometimes you've got to walk through these difficult times to get to the good times. And I don't think I would have done any of the TV adventures or any of the big expeditions that I did after leaving the military if I hadn't have had that accident at that time. And sometimes these things give you a fire to get up and grab life and go for it and be grateful for a second chance. And that's kind of what I felt, you know.
What's the longest you've gone without being able to get out of bed?
I don't know. I'm pretty good. I, you know, even when I'm injured, I'm stumbling around trying to get up. But yeah, no, I'm a pretty active person, you know. So yeah, I don't lie around in bed unless I really have to.
World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge Fiji. It premieres tomorrow. Bear Grylls with us on ESPN Radio. What is the worst thing that you've been bitten by?
Probably a viper in the Borneo jungle, a snake. But oof. I was lucky; it wasn't venomous, and I was fine. I think that was just more of a shock. And you got to be careful with even non-venomous snake bites with infection and stuff when you're in the jungle. But I don't know, I've had a lot of. I've had scorpion and tarantula bites and whole various things like that. But yeah, generally, again, I'm pretty lucky. I have three boys and they love like feeling. I've got a great little bit of gristle that's in my ankle that's basically just scar tissue from a scorpion bite years ago. Yeah. And they still love feeling that on my ankle. They go, oh, it's Papa's scorpion bite.
What is the most you've been surprised by an animal in your adventures where... You even with all your experience, you simply weren't expecting it.
Probably saltwater crocodile in the Northern Territories. You know, we'd been traveling through this swamp and we came to this little billabong, this little pool of water, and we thought we were out of croc territory now. And the crew were about to go and fill up water bottles. And I said, guys, that's super murky water. I wouldn't go near that for now. And they were, no, it'd be fine. I said, well, here we go. And I threw a rock in. And literally, as the rock hit the water, this massive, great big saltwater crocodile burst out, thrashing and turned this whole pool into like a washing machine of white water thrashing. And then suddenly we're absolutely still like glass again. And it was like, that's why we don't swim or fill our water bottles today.
That's horrifying. Bear Grylls with us. Again, World's Toughest Race Eco Challenge Fiji. We'll talk to him about that. In a second, what represents the most scared you've been in the presence of an animal?
In the presence of an animal, maybe jumping on the back of a big 16-foot tiger shark once by mistake out in the middle of the Pacific. And I built a raft and I was floating between these islands and I just jumped off and I didn't see this thing. It came straight low, sort of low level under the raft, and I landed on top of it, and I think the shark was as surprised as I was, and the shark shot off and I shot up out of the water back onto the raft, and then the shark came back to try and have the best of me and sort of thrashing at the raft, and I was like, wow, you know, sorry, I didn't mean to jump on you, I didn't see you there.
Yeah, that's happened to me a couple of times. It's terrible. Bear Grylls with us here on ESPN Radio. It's unbelievable. How did you find yourself? What are the details? Why were you rowing naked in a homemade tub in the ocean?
Well, these were the days before I was on TV, and nowadays I can't get away with doing things like that because, you know, you get whatever. But this was rowing for we rowed the length of the Thames, which is the biggest big river in the UK, to try and raise money for a friend of mine who lost his limb, lost his arm, and he needed and we helped raise money for a prosthetic for him at the time. And so that was the challenge. We rowed in a bathtub down the length of the Thames. So, yeah, there you go.
It's grueling. The times that I've done that naked, it's been really grueling. Bear Grylls with us again. World's toughest race, Eco Challenge, Fiji. What can you tell us about this? What's interesting, dangerous, weird about this show you're doing? Prime Video beginning tomorrow.
Yeah, well, the World's Toughest Race has all those elements in it. You know, it is what it says. It's the toughest race ever hosted on planet Earth. 450 miles non-stop racing day and night for 11 days through some of the harshest terrain and jungle and swamps and ravines on the planet. Teams brought from all over the world. And there was definitely a concern between those of us who put this thing together is anyone even going to finish this? You know, is it possible? But the answer is watch tomorrow night. What happens is amazing and inspiring and a real testament to friendships and to resilience and to never giving up. Ultimately, that's the story of these teams that make it through, and it's amazing.
World's Toughest Race, Eco Challenge Fiji, tomorrow night, Prime Video. Stugat, you answer this question with your thoughts. Which of these do you think tastes the worst, Stugat? Raw frozen yak eyeballs, camel intestine juice, raw goat testicles, a live snake, maggots as big as your hand, or a giant live spider? Which do you think tastes the worst there, Stugat?
The testicles.
The raw goat testicles. Bear Grylls, which of those tastes the worst?
Bullseye, yeah. The testicle, truly. Truly. Because the thing is, I tried to swallow it. I made the error of trying to swallow it whole without chewing it. And I couldn't do it. So then I sort of, my throat like squashed this thing, and then it exploded into a mouthful of everything you knew was going to be inside that testicle. And then I vomited, and then I ended up having to swallow the vomit, the testicle, and the contents of the testicle. And it was just a really bad way to kick off an adventure we had in the Sahara Desert a few years back.
You really don't say.
You picked a low point in my life. I've had many great, great times.
You are nuts.
Injuries, near death, worst, you know. There have been a lot of highlights as well, you know.
I tried to hit the loser game show sound. It doesn't work. Thank you, Bear. Thank you. Bear, you are amazing. What you do is amazing. World's Toughest Race, Eco Challenge, Fiji, tomorrow, Prime Video.
Hold that thought. Let's sell some ads.
Surprising bonus thoughts on nut milk. T Buckets, Tony is calling him. TJ Warren with Stugatz is his biggest fan. He has no bigger national fan, I don't think, than you, Stugatz. You told everybody he could give you 45 any given night. TJ Warren with us now on ESPN Radio. I guess we'll start there. Your first night in the bubble. As soon as Stugatz says TJ Warren can give you 45 any given night, TJ Warren, who had never gotten 45 in a night, goes into the bubble and gets more than 45 in a night. So what the hell happened there? And thank you for joining us, T Bucket.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
What happened with you getting into the bubble and all of a sudden you're the breakout star of the bubble? Is that something that you were expecting to happen the months preceding something like that?
Given when our season ended, we've been playing really good basketball throughout the whole year, and definitely wanted to use the restart as a chance to really take it to another level. You know, All-Star Sabonis, he went out with an injury and he hasn't been playing. So guys just had to step up, and I knew in my mind I just wanted to just be more aggressive and try to step up with all the with the injuries with the team. So, I mean, it worked out so far. The work's not done, and we got to continue to get better.
What does scoring 50 mean to you as someone who grew up loving basketball? Like going into an NBA game and scoring 50, what were the touchstone moments in your childhood where a guy put up 50 and you realized the number matters to you?
Yeah, man, it's a great feeling being able to envision that and really do it in a game after growing up in the backyard or in the front yard, just playing with your friends and just having that deep imagination of having these type of moments. And it's sort of a surreal feeling to be able to do that on this type of stage, and how all eyes are on us and the restart in this uncertain year. It was a great feeling.
Now, TJ, I did say at the time you're a guy that can give your team 45 on any given night, even though you hadn't done so in your career. But with that knowledge, did you feel like you were a guy that could give your team on 45 on any given night, even though you hadn't done it yet?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fully confident in my ability. I've always been able to score the ball. I always had a knack for scoring. Throughout my whole basketball career, from high school to college, to the NBA. So I work on my game so much. I just knew my time was coming to be able to have these type of moments, and all the hard work and the time I put into the game is kind of just reward me with the type of results like this. But I understand that there's a lot more I want to do, and not just be known as a scorer, just want to known as a two-way guy that plays defense as well as score whenever the team needs me to. So just wanted to continue to get better.
Chris, what happened there? Why were you making faces at Stugatz? He's running around his room doing the Tiger Woods, makes a putt at the – like, what is happening here?
I mean, he's just in this for himself. I mean, TJ's been a scorer like throughout his college career, and then you just ask him, did you know that you could have a good game? Like, what are you doing?
Yes, that is.
What am I doing? I believed in TJ Warren when no one else believed in TJ Warren. I knew 45-50 was right around the corner. I knew what he was doing was right around the corner. It was just a matter of getting Sabonis out of there. And look what happened.
Yeah, and Oladipo. Getting Sabonis and Oladipo out there. Give T-Buckets all the touches. Boom. That's, you know what? You're right, Stugatz. You've never been more right about anything. The Pacers, TJ, though, nationally, you feel it, right? Everyone's like, yeah, whatever. The Pacers will win 50 games. They'll overachieve. They'll be great. But, yeah, whatever. They're the Pacers. There's only four so far that team can go.
Yeah, I mean, just being my first year, I just see the how much the Pacers really care for their players. And it's a first-class organization. I understand that we're a small market, but we got a group of guys that are hungry, chip on their shoulders, and out to prove something. And I feel like with this group, we're all young in our mid-20s, and we're just continuing to get better as time goes on. And I know nobody's satisfied here, and everybody wants to push to be great. So it's good if everybody had that mindset moving forward.
We were really looking forward to that Monday night game because of the escalation of everything with Jimmy Butler. Mike Ryan's an enormous Miami Heat fan. We had people in the crowd there, Stugatz, my father. Mike, what did you want to ask TJ Warren?
Well, TJ, Jimmy Butler sort of dismissed you there. And to guys like Stugatz and myself, who was aligned with Stugatz in saying that you can get 45 any given night because I've seen how much you've improved year over year, I found that dismissive. Obviously, you did in that moment. Have cooler heads prevailed, or is this playoff series going to be chippy?
I mean, any playoff series is going to be competitive. But I'm definitely not distracted by what's going on, like, towards the media and how people might feel about me. I mean, at the end of the day, we all competitors and we all going to play hard at the end of the day. But I can't really give my energy to everything off the court. Just got to compete when you're on the court.
It's a good answer, but were you hurt when he's coming out there publicly and calling you soft and saying you're not on his level? Was it something that's just personally hurtful when you know you're a good player and it's not something you want to hear?
I mean, nah. I mean, guys, I mean, you think of LeBron and all the top players in the league. I mean, they get hate, but that doesn't stop them from being who they are, you know? I mean, it's all a part of the game. You can't really be too concerned about what other people think. It's just part of the game, so you just got to keep moving forward.
So how do you feel about Jimmy Butler? Excuse me.
How do I feel? I mean, I don't feel no way. I'm unbothered. I mean, nothing can't really get reaction out of me. I'm just cool, calm, and collected.
TJ Warren with us here on ESPN Radio. TJ, what's the big difference here? How does it feel playing in empty arenas, not playing in front of fans? It's got to feel different to you, right?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Did he hang up on us?
I mean, it could be a coincidence after that. I thought we were good. There was a buzzer that went off, and I don't think that was for our interview.
He hung up on us.
You Uh-oh. Think so? No. Okay. Well, no, I thought we couched everything.
All right, Mike Ryan, get some of the best hang-ups in show history.
No, I think that was a coincidence. Chris, what do you think? Coincidence? Or?
I think that was a connection. I don't think he hung up.
I'm a little worried, though, because I was growing to really like TJ Warren.
Yep. Yeah.
But we're at a loss right now.
Man, I was trying to be so careful in protecting our relationship.
You were very gentle the way you asked the question. I was one of the guys. I was with you on Pro 45. You're a Heat homer, and you were very soft with him.
Maybe the fourth Jimmy Butler follow-up we could have maybe pulled.
It was only a third. It was only a third, and I interrupted him to do it, though. Yeah, and I got his feelings. Yeah. I'm like, how did you feel? And it sort of cornered him, right? Like, I've got to have a feeling here.
So you doubted him on the front end. You ruined our relationship on the back end. I mean, you've done nothing with TJ Warren here.
T-Bucket! Get him back on the line!
You want? I still have a minute. Let me call back and just, hey, are we good? Do you have to run?
All right. Yes, let's gather. Chill. Let's sink into this for a second. Stu God says Mike Ryan calls back and see if we're okay. But what your best guess is, Chris is hopeful. I also think it was just bad timing. I don't think that the question, because you were asking him about, you know, people have said that the sight lines are better for shooters. You were asking him about playing in the bubble. That's not an objectionable question.
Yeah, but by that point, we had already followed up twice on Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to go sidelines there. Yeah. And I, in the middle of it, I have like sort of like a rotating list of numbers. And anytime someone calls in on our line, I lose the most recent number that was called. And unfortunate for me, I've lost the callback number. And he hasn't called back yet. So given our history, I'm just led to believe the worst.
Let's find out together. We're going to gather information. We're going to regather ourselves. This is not bad for the show. It is just generally bad, as the show often is. And so we will gather ourselves.
I didn't really see that one coming.
I didn't either.
You didn't give us a warning that we
But
were
now it's out him. In the air there. So stay in your cars. If you're listening on podcasts, stay right where you are in the next segment, Radio Tease.
Hold that thought. Let's sell some ads.
I'm not sure, though. I am not sure.
I mean, you even held me up as a meat shield, so it wasn't coming from
I
you.
I really
given
did.
Your
That's
history.
Right. I was hiding so behind you. That's right.
It didn't really catch me until now. I'm like, wow, sharing the ball. I'm
I just
excited
sort
to
of
get in
tossed
on
it to you, third or fourth question. And then as soon as it was open, I jumped in there with Jimmy Butler follows. Such a media member.
Even if he hung up on us, I think I still like him.
Me too. The only person I don't like there is me. And I believe that that's the entire audience right now. So, familiar position.